give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Back on Downtown, time for us to get together with our friend, longtime sports writer of the Bangor Daily News and classic rock connoisseur, Larry Mahoney. Hi there, Larry.
Hey, that is the letter by the Box Tops that went to number one in 1967. One of seven top 40 hits for the Box Tops, based out of Memphis, Tennessee. It was written by Wayne Carson, and the opening line was given to him by his father, who said, give me a ticket for an aeroplane. And the song was written. 3 years later, as you would know, being a connoisseur yourself, Joe Cocker cranked out the letter that went to number seven. But it's a terrific song, and the group was I really enjoyed the group. Sweet Cream Ladies, again, they had Cry Like a Baby went to number
yeah.
two.
And Alex Chilton was only 16 when he recorded the letter.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah. And it was, I think it's in the Grammy Hall of Fame. It was like number 342 all time, or 372 among 500 songs, and just a very pleasant song. And the thing I love is that you come out with the letter by Joe Cocker. It's almost like a different song. It's the same song, but his version was so much different. I would always wanted to do a radio show, an hour-long radio show where I would play two songs, the exact same songs by two different artists.
Well, look at Joe Cocker's version of with a Little Help from My Friends.
Yep. And then Unchain My Heart by Ray Charles. Well, Joe Cocker, again, does a dynamite version of that. It's a terrific song. The letter, as you know, Rich, you have original band members, and then they move on, and they're replaced by other ones, other band members. One of the keyboardists for them, he was a keyboardist from 2000 to 2010, and from 2015 to 2020, was Barry Walsh, brother of former UMaine hockey coach Sean Walsh.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that is a great little tidbit.
Yeah. I actually met him, and he mentioned that a long time. I may have been at Sean's funeral, but he'd been with the Box Tops. Yeah, but I didn't realize you'd been with the Box Tops for that long, for 15 years. That would be a band I would definitely go see. I just a lot of their music, Neon Rainbow, just a bunch of good hits.
That's good stuff. Always fun talking music. Someday we're not even going to bother to talk sports when you come on, Larry. We'll just talk music the whole time.
You know, I'd love to. Well, you know, we have that Tony Burrows connection.
Yeah. Speaking of that too, did you and I trying to think of the gentleman who wrote the book, but we had him on several months ago. A guy from Southern Maine wrote a wonderful book on the history of rock concerts in the Portland area from the mid-50s up until the opening of the Cumberland County Civic Center in, I think, 1977.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And wow, did that would be interesting.
Oh, the book is great. So many fun stories.
Yeah, I mean, tonight they got Post Malone here, and I didn't really know who he was. I did some research. Wow, he's huge. I mean, this guy's got Grammy winner. I mean, and they had Pitbull a couple nights ago. I mean, Alex Grace had a very good summer. He's had some really top-notch concerts.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. Let's talk a little football first, Larry.
Do
that
we
was.
Have to?
I know.
Do
I know.
We have to?
I tried to spare Jordan. Looking back too much when he was with us a few minutes ago, but that was just ugly on so many levels. And I think the worst part of it was it came at a time when there were so many possibilities ahead. You win that one at home, you start your conference season undefeated, you go on the road for a game you should win, and you send the fans home with a good memory because there's not another home game until homecoming in mid-October, but none of that worked out very well.
No, it was, geez, Richard, the sad thing, it was over before it started. I mean, they scored on their first three possessions, and of course they had scored on their first five possessions at Montana State. Montana State had scored on its first five possessions against Maine, and again, you know, it comes down to third down efficiency. I mean, Derek Robertson and his crew, they were 11 for 15. Maine just couldn't get off the field. And we tend to look at the defense, and I've done research, and, you know, they're in the bottom bottom tenth of virtually every defensive category. But the offense has got to take some responsibility, Rich. I mean, they've got to move the ball. I mean, their first three series produced 28 yards. I mean, you've got to give the defense a blow. Get them off. Let them.
Well, yes.
Defense coordinator, but three and out touchdown.
Right, and against a Monmouth team that came in giving up more than 500 yards a game.
Yeah. I mean, they just didn't. No, I mean, it was. You looked at it, and initially you were somewhat concerned because Monmouth was simply controlling the line of scrimmage, and when you control the line of scrimmage in football, you're going to win the football game. It's that simple, and they were. I mean, Maine, as I put in my analysis, which should be in the paper tomorrow, I said, there are two things. Rich, I see if you and Bob agree with me on this, but I thought there were two keys to the game. Number one, Maine had to control the ball. They had to control possession, and number two, they had to get pressure on Derek Robertson.
Mm.
It was 33-26 in favor of Monmouth in time of possession, and Robertson wasn't sacked. And he's slow. He's slow. I mean, he's somebody you can get to. I mean, he does release the ball quick, but and those are the two underlying themes of the game. They just they have this habit as they have in the past several years of getting behind early and having to dig themselves out, and they never did. I mean, their whole offense the first half was a Trevin Ewing 98-yard kickoff return.
And the defense, I mean, you go back to that 2018 run to the national semifinals, and they had 47 sacks in 14 games that year, produced a ton of turnovers. This year, and this is a continuation of the last couple of seasons, they can't get to the quarterback. They have three sacks in three games, and they've only forced two turnovers in three games.
Yeah, and one of the sacks was against Montana State's backup quarterback.
Right,
in the
right.
fourth quarter or something. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, and some of that is it's certainly Rich is personnel to some degree, but also, I mean. As I write in the analysis, I mean, sometimes you've got to blitz. You have to. It's risky because you leave your corners and safeties in one on ones, but you have to do something. I mean, because quarterbacks at this level, if you give them 4, 5, 6 seconds to throw, someone's gonna cut off the route and get open. I mean, you can't expect the secondary to cover people if you're giving them that much time. And so it'll be interesting. This is a tough week with Merrimack. I mean, they lost the Air Force 20-6. They lost. They got hammered by Joe Fagnano in UConn, 63-17. But then they came back with a win over Bucknell, and I watched them against the Air Force. They were impressive. So, this is a huge game for them, and it's a game again. Then they've got Albany and Delaware on the road. So, and like you said, they don't play again at home till October 19th. So, I mean, they've got to buy in there somewhere, but they've got to try to get this straightened out beginning Saturday.
Well, and we'll face another quarterback this week that was in the Maine system in Aiden Pereira, and if he's able to pick that defense apart as well as Derek Robertson did, they could be in some trouble.
They could. We didn't really get to know Aiden Pereira. I mean, he never played. So, I mean, at least as I mentioned in the upcoming analysis, I mean, for the optimists, look, okay, they gave up. The Monmouth is number two in the FCS in passing yards. Montana State is number two in rushing yards. So I mean, okay, let's you want to cut them some slack, cut them some slack. But I mean, there's no excuse this weekend. Okay, I mean, Montana State is number three team in the country. You didn't expect them to have any success out there, and they show some glimpses in the second half against basically the second string offense anyway. It's just a Derek Robertson. Who knows their defense better than Derek Robertson?
Mm.
So I mean, so if you want to cut him some slack there, but I mean that's it. Okay, now you're playing a Merrimack team, and I don't care if Aiden Pereira knows the offense, the defense at all. I mean, again, he's somebody that also. You know what his weaknesses are, and you've got to go out there and play some smash mouth football. Get your offense. Don't wait for a half to start producing. Get out and establish yourself right off the bat. Because I mean, they keep getting off these terrible starts and they bury themselves. And again. It's complimentary football. You can't just blame the defense if the offense isn't moving the ball, and you can't blame the offense if the defense can't stop anybody.
And they've got a, I think they've got a steal one now. I think going in, you thought of Monmouth as a win at home. Now I think you've got to go beat somebody on the road that maybe ahead in that, well, if we play really well column, and whether that's an Albany on the road or an Elon later in the season, or based on the fact that they only got a 1-point win over Towson this past weekend, maybe if you're playing well by homecoming, you could take down a Villanova at home, but you got to get one of those to even up the score for losing one that you should have had.
Yeah, no question. No question. And you know, the schedule, again, there are wins on that schedule, are games that they can win. And you know, maybe, you know, I mean, possibly, I mean, I don't know. They're not going to be as big a underdog to anybody left on the schedule except Oklahoma.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you expected them to get hammered by Montana State, and they did. You expected a much, much better performance and possibly a win, probably a win over Monmouth. And that certainly, and Monmouth put a damper on that immediately. So now it's a matter of, okay, you know, wash your mouth out. Okay, first three games, we got one win. You only had two last year. You only had two the previous year. Okay, so you got one. Now learn, okay, you just played, you know, a team you knew that was going to probably hammer you, even though you don't want to go into a game like that. But then you lost to a team, you know, by a lopsided margin you shouldn't have lost to by that margin anyway. If you lose, okay, you lose by a touchdown. But to lose, you know, like they did 51-22, I mean, okay. So, but in the bottom line, Richard, and you know this, if you lose 20-17 in overtime or 63-7, it's still a loss. So don't, you know, it's just a loss. And learn from it. That's the important thing. Learn from it. You know, come out and play good, aggressive, hard-nosed football and create some turnovers and get pressure on the quarterback and control the football.
We're talking with Larry Mahoney of the Bangor Daily News. Maine men's hockey pick number 3 in the Hockey East preseason poll. Is that about right going in?
Well, I mean, I was on the media poll. That's where I picked them. Yeah, I mean, I they have potential to be better than last year.
All right,
they're certainly going to be deeper than last year. I mean, they return all of their defensemen. They added a top 4 defenseman from Merrimack. They brought in three forwards, 3 quality forwards. Ross Minton was the leading scorer at Colgate last year. Taylor McCarr, of course, from UMass, younger brother of Cale McCarr of the Avalanche. They also brought in Cam Fowler from UMass Lowell, Charlie Russell from Clarkson. So they brought in some transfers. So, you know, they feel they can roll 4 lines comfortably and 3 sets of D, and Evan Boy is back in goal. So, I mean, they're going to go into the season with 1 NHL draft pick, and that's Taylor McCarr, and going up against teams like BC and BU, which will have 13 or 14. But again, you know, it's a sum of the parts. This team, if they play, the way that Ben Barr has taught them to play, which is, you know, in your face, finish your checks, outwork teams, win pucks, get to the net front, defend with purpose. There's a lot of encouraging signs here. And again, they did get Josh Nadeau back, who was a preseason All Hockey East selection, who was a third teamer last year. Lyndon Breen, again, one of their co-captains along David Brazil along the blue line. So, yeah, I think people are really excited about this team, and they know that they've won 8 more games each of the first 3 years. They won 7, then they won 15 last year, they won 23. So, but it's a unforgiving league, Rich. It's, you got guys you're watching on TV every day now in the NHL from Hockey East. They come maybe play 1 year, maybe 2, and it's a tough league. Every game is a dogfight, and I think they have a legit shot, a very good chance to get back to the NCAA tournament, and hopefully fare better, and certainly like to get to a Hockey East championship game also.
What do you think will be the strength of the team, Larry?
The defense. Yeah, I mean they play not just their defense core and their goaltending, but you know, the forwards have to play in the defensive zone. I think they'll be tough to score on. And so I think that's a great place to start. And then it's just a matter of, can they carve out enough goals? I mean, will someone like Nolan Renwerke, a senior who was dinged up last year, can he have a good year to complement the Nadeaus and the Breens and the Mittens and some of these other forwards? Harrison Scott, who had a terrific year of Bethlehem transfer, had 15 goals. So, can they get some scoring depth? If they do, I think that would be a real plus and could put them over the edge and, make a long playoff run.
All right, I've got a little music tidbit for you. You gave us the great Barry Walsh nugget. So this one came from an interview we did a few years ago with the wonderful actor Michael McKean from Laverne and Shirley.
Michael McKean.
Better Call Saul, of course, The Spinal Tap, all the Christopher Guest movies.
Is that a classic?
Oh, love it. And they're doing a sequel of it now. But he was in a band briefly that had two top 15 hits in the 1960s in the subgenre known as Baroque Pop.
Huh. Baroque Pop.
I'll give you a little taste and you'll know who it is.
Okay.
Here you go.
Oh, don't walk away, Renee. The third bank.
Let me give you a little bit.
Okay, I was like that. Of course, that was also a Fort Pop song.
Yes, yeah, Walk Away, Renee, and then
Left Bank. I'm sorry, not Third Bank. Left
right.
Bank, yeah.
Left Bank, and they had another hit, Pretty Ballerina.
Yes. Is that what that's called? Baroque rock
or baroque pop, but Michael McKean told us the story, though. Apparently, the lead singer of the group got in a big argument with his dad, who was managing them. This was after they'd had their hits, and they both quit and walked away from the band. And so the guys that were left were looking for people. Michael joined the band, but they never recorded another song while he was with them.
Oh, that's a great story. That is a great story. Because Spinal Tap is just what was the other one about the Westminster Dog Show?
Best in Show.
Yes, I mean really, but Spinal Tap is so. I still see the scene where they get lost trying to get on stage in Cleveland. There are all these passageways, and they couldn't find the stage.
It's their speakers, just like my headphones, always turned up to 11.
Oh, yeah, but he was great. He's a good actor. He's been in a lot of different things.
He's going to be on Broadway soon in a new production of Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, that'll be good.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
Absolutely. Well, Larry...
He's always got that grin, you know? He's always got that, I just stole something grin, you know?
Exactly.
A mischievous grin. A Spinal Tap was really... that's a must-see for anybody.
Larry, great talking with you as always. Appreciate you making time this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you again in a couple of weeks.
All right, so we're all going to walk away, Renee.
There you go. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Rich.